Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
It is the time for bones. The bone for time is now.
Happy April. It's bone o'clock.
It's bone o'clock. I saw something wild on the internet. Something so unforeseen. Would you like to know what it is?
I'm intrigued, yeah.
Colorado is reforming their funeral home laws.
See, I feel like you sent me something on Instagram about that because I thought I saw that headline, but yes! I thought, oh no, too good to be true.
Too good to be true. For those who don't remember all of the instances of funeral home malfeasance, most of them happen in Colorado. And so to see them making some reforms around that, I thought was really exciting because
it's needed.
Yeah, because I was like, we cannot be the only ones to realize. I think, you know, future Sophie, you spell check me on this, but it's got to be at least two or three out of the five, like, you know, of funeral home disasters that I've talked about.
Yep. She's right. The Return to Nature Funeral Home, which was in Colorado, which did not bury 200 bodies. And then Megan Hess, the woman who was selling body parts on the internet.
They just got to tighten up. And I'm so happy to see them doing that.
Yeah, you expect it from someplace like Florida. Yeah. You don't necessarily expect it from Colorado, but no, I'm glad they're making some changes.
I mean, Florida's buck wild, then I'll give it to them.
Oh yeah, different kind of wild, I guess.
I would love to see some funeral home malfeasance out of Florida. Where are you guys at on the get on the board?
No, don't get on the board.
In olden days, a glimpse of FEMA was only for morbid dreamers. But you're not alone. Bring anything round. Two goofy gals with deathly interest go on a skeleton inquest in your headphones. Anything bones.
Hello and welcome to Anything Bones. I'm Sophie Dances with the Devil Schwartz.
And I am Caitlin, the Forger Hart.
Ooh.
And this is the podcast podcast where we talk about bones, bone-related topics, and lately, crime and archaeology and cool history stuff.
And horses.
And horses and dinosaurs. It's all over the board.
I have gotten such a response about the man-eating horses.
Oh, really? Do tell.
People are just intrigued by it.
It's just not something you would expect.
Well, I think it's so unnatural that people are like, ugh.
Yeah.
I was trying to tell. So I went to Washington, D.C., the other Washington.
The other one.
The
yeah.
worst one. That's what we kept telling them. We were like, we have Washington at home.
Far superior. It doesn't need to be quantified with silly letters.
Yeah, we don't need initials to know who we are. We also gave them shit about how small all their states are.
Damn.
We're like, I know that they used to be. Yeah. Well, I know they used to be colonies, but that's no excuse. Mm-hmm. Our states are huge. You can drive all the way to my home state of California. You can drive tip to toe, yeah, for 10 hours or some shit like that, even more than that.
And you'd be in California the whole time.
You could do Delaware in like maybe 2 hours, maybe a hour.
I haven't spent a ton of time on the East Coast. Maybe it's time.
It was really fun, all joking aside. I went for I almost said Seattle Sketchfest. Oh my God. DC Sketchfest with my group, the Maple Daddies. And we were so warmly welcomed. Bad Medicine was the sketch group that was kind of spearheading the whole thing. And they had been to Seattle Sketchfest 2 years ago. And they were like, we're going to have a Sketchfest in DC. And we were like, okay, you should. And they were like, will you do it? And we were like, mm-hmm. And then 2 years later, they were like, so we're doing the thing. And we were like, yeah, hey. No, we're coming. Yeah.
We pulled through. That's great.
Yeah. It was so much fun. And like, I love seeing other groups from other cities. Like we saw a group called Field Trip from Boston that we saw in Portland and made friends with. And we did, the boys did a little bit of sightseeing with them and we hung out with them at the after party. It's just, it's nice to make friends from all over the country.
Yeah, all over our great nation.
All over our great nation. And oh, Caitlin, I have something wild to tell you. I don't know if I told you this yet. When we were getting ready for our performance, the venue and the green room, the venue was like this underground like comedy club that you had to like go down some stairs to get to. And the green room was in a hotel across the street.
Oh, that's interesting. Fancy.
Yeah. And not a setup I have seen before. And no. I have over 20 years of performing experience. And I was like, this is new for me.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was fine. It was nice. It was swanky. It was in a conference room in the Mayflower Hotel.
Sure.
Super. And this is, like, a hotel the politicians are, like, known to, like, chill at. And, like, that was not something really known to me. So, when we got there, the whole lobby was crawling with people wearing suits.
Okay.
We looked so scrubby. Oh, my God. Like, with our, like, instruments and our props and our little Hawaiian shirts. And we're like, we're not supposed to be here. Surely this is not the right place. Yeah.
We're here for goofs. What are you guys here for?
Laws! We're like, okay. It was so funny. Oh, my God. When we were getting in the elevator, a couple of the suited people were in there with us and we had instruments. And so one of the guys goes, make room for the band.
Okay.
I'm like, we're not playing for you, doinks. Yeah. Like, you will not see me later. But like, so we get to the green room, we get ready. Then someone comes and tells us, you're not meant to be in the green room to get ready. You're meant to be at the venue to get ready. What's the point of the green room is my question.
Yeah, what?
Doesn't matter. So we're rushing through to get back through the lobby, across the street, and into the venue. But as we're like speed walking through the lobby, I make eye contact with a very old man. And this very old man is looking at me and I'm looking at him. He's like an old kind of baby faced at the same time type of man. And I know that I don't like him. I'm like, oh, I have a yucky, yucky feeling about this man. And as we're like almost to each other passing, I know who it is. I am staring down the barrel of fucking Newt Gingrich.
No, weird.
Barreling down the Newt. Yeah.
Just like, hello. What are you doing here? What are you doing here?
Yeah, basically. Like in that moment, he knew who I was and that I wasn't supposed to be there. And in that moment, I knew who he was and that he was supposed to be there, but I hated him.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I gave him a hideous stank face.
Good.
But as we're running across the street now outside and out in the open, Nick, one of the fellow Maple Daddies runs up to me and a political science degree holder goes, was that fucking Newt Gingrich? And I was like, I believe that it was. And we both look at each other and say, because of where we are.
it
couldn't be anywhere
else. Yeah. Question mark?
Yeah. But Newt Gingrich did have an effect on our performance because at the end of our set, we play a song and I saw that Nick was not quite, he was playing his mandolin, but so quietly. And I was like, Nick, you know, in my head, I was like, Nick, you can feel free to really strum that fucker. Like, you know, giving it to him. We're on tour, you know? And then I look over after a little while of the song and he's not playing it at all. It's on his back and he's dancing and he's working it. But like, I'm like, what's going on? And so after the set, I look at him, I say, Nicky, Bicky. What was with the mandolin? And he goes, because I saw him tuning it before the show, and he goes, it was out of tune. I immediately started to play it, and it was out of tune.
Oh, no.
And a beat passes, and we look at each other, we go, Newt! We got cursed
Newt
by
Gingrich.
Newt. Yeah, we got the curse of the Newt.
Almost ruined the song.
Almost. But Nicky Bicky is too slicky for Newt Gingrich.
Wild.
Wild. So that was our time in DC.
Yeah, shit.
Yeah, had a great
performance.
You
see over there.
Yeah, so many wrinkly old men you don't like.
No.
That was the only politician or famo that I saw, but
cool.
Other than that, went to some museums, had did not get to go to the bone related ones, unfortunately.
Oh, well, you can't win them all. You just have to go back. We have to go back.
We go back together to see the mummies. Yeah,
absolutely.
You swear, you promise.
Pinky promise. Jesus.
Did we say you were going? Wait.
Yeah, I'll go first.
Okay.
Oh, you need to, you have something to tell me?
Yes, dinosaur related.
Okay. Hit me with it.
So when you picture dinosaurs in movies, do you picture their feet like kind of like an elephant's foot? Like kind of that sure. Hoof kind of?
Yeah, stump hoof.
Stump hoof? Well, guess what?
What?
That's wrong.
Okay.
Dinosaurs had toes.
Toes, not claws?
Toes, claws on the toes.
Oh, okay.
But they had toes. Ugh,
that's weird.
And little toe beans.
Did they have toenails? Could a dinosaur hypothetically get a pedicure?
I think absolutely.
Huh.
Food for thought.
Well, thank you for that. Should we get to our shit here?
Abso-fucking-tootly.
Wow.
Can't take me anywhere.
Well, I got a wild one for you. I got a juicy one.
Yeah, you intrigued me right off the bat with your name.
Forger. So I am going to take us into Crimeville once more.
Beep, beep, toot, toot.
So for sources, I listened to a podcast I've never listened to before, but it was pretty good. True Crime with Kendall Ray. It was an episode from March 9th, 2023. I listened to good old Crime Junkie from June 21, 2021, an article from Yahoo, the Washington Post. Yahoo! Remember that? Remember those commercials?
I did not know that website still existed. Continue.
Yeah, Yahoo is real. And it is one of my sources, actually.
I know it exists.
Do you think Ask Jeeves still exists?
I can find out very quickly.
Cool, I'll keep going.
Go.
Okay, so Yahoo, Washington Post, and all that's interesting. So this is a case that you may... Ask Jeeves is real?
Yeah.
Cool.
It's still up. I do not see the characteristic butler, though. He has,
been
stricken from the roster.
That's a ripoff. So this case will take us up to Canada, actually. And we're going to start in the late 80s.
Okay.
This is one you might have heard of, might not have. I'm curious to hear what you think. What you think you know.
What I know is I know nothing.
Oh, wow. So this is the case of Jennifer Pan. Maybe when I say more, you might recognize this. So she's born on June 17th, 1986 in Markham, Ontario, to parents Bikha Pan and Hui Han Pan. They were Vietnamese immigrants who had immigrated to Ontario, Canada in 1979. And were very hard workers. They both worked at a auto parts manufacturer in different like sectors of the company. And over time, after they moved to Canada, they amassed enough money to buy a large home, two cars, one for each of the parents, and had a good amount in savings. So they were doing really well. And they also had two kids, Jennifer and Felix, her younger brother. They were, by all accounts, pretty into strict discipline. This is not a term that I personally can speak to, but some would refer to them as tiger parents.
Oh, interesting.
So this is like, it's kind of a stereotype around Asian culture and like parents being very like having a lot of disciplinary rules for their children and being very focused on like education. Obviously, this is something I read about. This is not something that I can speak to in any way. But this is something that's going to come up later. So that's why I bring it up. So Jennifer is a high achiever from the beginning, and her parents really focus on education with her and also like extracurriculars. So she takes piano lessons. It sounds like she played a couple other instruments. She was a figure skater starting in elementary school, and her goal was to become like an Olympic figure skater and skate for Canada. Unfortunately, she tore a ligament in her knee in like eighth grade, and so she wasn't able to become a professional skater. That was a big blow to like her dreams, obviously, but she continued to like do fairly well in school and play piano and things. And that was like from the outside, it seemed like everything was okay, but it definitely on the inside, she was not okay. Trigger warning for self-harm. sometime in like late middle school, early high school, it's known that she began cutting herself. And I never went through that, so I don't know what that feels like to, but it sounds like it brings you some kind of release and control. And that was something she was really craving in her life, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's a very difficult thing to go through.
Yes. So her parents were really strict academically, and they like her, they wouldn't let her go to like social events or like school dances. And obviously she was forbidden from dating, but that didn't mean that she wasn't like, so basically in 11th grade, she meets a senior named Daniel Wong. The only thing I know about him, like other than that he's Jennifer's boyfriend, is that he was apparently forced to transfer schools because police found marijuana in his car.
Oh, no.
So, like, sources call him a drug dealer, but I don't know. Maybe there was more than marijuana, but you know what I mean? That's all we know.
Who among us did not sell a little weed in high school?
I definitely didn't, but, like, rock on.
Who among us?
Listener. So it sounds like around 11th grade, middle to late high school, her grades kind of start slipping from A's to B's, maybe even some C's here and there, which, you know, is sometimes happens. And she was still accepted for early admission into Ryerson University, but then she failed a calculus class and actually never graduated high school. So the university rescinded their offer.
Oh.
And so it was around this time that Jennifer started to forge her report cards for her parents.
No, Jennifer.
She did. Yeah. So she was an average student, but she was forging her report cards to make it look like she was an A student, straight A student.
Oh, this slope gets very slippery.
Just you wait. Do you know this one?
I might. There's like three or four cases bumping around in my head that it could be.
Okay.
Lying to your parents is a very slippery slope sometimes.
It does happen a fair bit in these cases.
Like, it just makes me think of, well, not just lying to your parents, but like the double life forging thing is like very telling. It makes me think of, like, you know, those family annihilators that like make up entire lives for themselves and go to the train station pretending to be at work. Or there's another case that I know of, a young man who said that he was going to work for SpaceX and like all these things and started forging documents about it. It's just the forging documents and the beginning of the constructing of a fake life is never a good sign.
It's so funny that you say that. So by all accounts, according to her parents and friends and family, other than her boyfriend Daniel, she did start at Ryerson University in the fall of 2004.
No.
She told her father that she planned to go for 2 years and then transfer to the University of Toronto. And her dad, Hui Han, was so proud of her that he bought her a laptop.
No, father.
She would buy used textbooks and school supplies. And like, she truly, she would go off in the morning and she would either go to like, sounds like she went to like libraries or, you know, just like Daniel's house or friend, you know, she just like bummed around and then came back with like her textbooks and her school supplies. One source said that she would watch like documentaries and take notes and be like, look, parents, like these are my notes from school. Like,
we say this every time and it's like never this simple, but it's like with all this time and effort, you could actually go to college.
You could actually like finish high school or get your GED or go to trade school. Like, there's so many things that she could do. Get a job, go into the workforce. Like,
this is not good. Is this a recent case? No, this is the 80s, right?
She was born in the 80s, but this is all happening. Okay. This is all kind of taking place when we are in late middle school, early high school.
Continue, please.
In Canada, yeah.
In Canada.
Yeah, yeah. So she is telling her dad also, who is like how are we paying for this? She tells her dad that she's got a loan that she's getting. She's got scholarships, grants. Like, dad, you don't have to pay for any of this. Like, I've got it covered.
Of course, because lying is free.
Mm-hmm. So she keeps this up for 2 years. So we're up into 2006. She's living with her parents during most of this time, by the way. And then, you know, right on schedule in 2006, she's like, yep, I am transferring to the University of Toronto. I believe she told them that she was getting a degree in like pharmacology or pharmaceuticals of some kind. And again, for 2 more years, she pretended to go to school at the University of Toronto. And every day was just taking the bus downtown or to Daniel's house or just wherever.
This will not end well.
Oh, no. So it's 2008, 4 years of this.
Oh, my God.
And it's time to go. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, just like, I don't know how people keep this up. Like, yeah. I understand that, like, everyone's personalities are different and that everyone has different levels of, like, conscience and guilt and, like, ability to like lie or hold secrets or things like that, but like I find it very difficult to like keep anything like that up.
This big a secret, I would explode.
The stress has to be everything. Like,
well, it's just like lie upon lie upon lie. And like I said, she was living with them for a lot of it. One of my sources said that she convinced her parents to like allow her to move out and be like closer to the school. But she doesn't stay there for the whole time. So she's very much under the, like, care of her parents.
Can you hear Lewis snoring under my chair?
No, no.
It's really cute.
Cute. So it's her graduation time. She's about to graduate. And she tells her parents, like, oh, actually, we are such a big, like, graduating class that they're only allowing students to have one, like, visitor. So I don't want to choose between you guys. So I'm just going to get, I gave the ticket away. So you don't have to come to my graduation.
That's, I mean, I don't even know what I'd say if I was like them to that. Like,
no. So she tells her parents that she's going to be volunteering at a children's hospital in Toronto, Canada. And at this point, I believe she's back living with her parents. And they actually grow suspicious because she doesn't have like a uniform. She doesn't have an ID badge. She doesn't really have any of the things you would have to work in a hospital.
Yeah.
And so, one of my sources was like, they followed her to work one day and like dropped her off and like demanded to like find out where she worked and all this stuff. And it like she hid from them for a while, but then it turns out they figured out that like she'd been lying to them. And then it came out like eventually that she hadn't actually gone to the University of Toronto. It sounds like she didn't tell them about not graduating high school and not going to Ryerson University. But I don't know. At some point, the story unravels, or at least most of it does. And so, like I said, she's living with her parents. She's 24. They take her phone away. They take her laptop away. And they're like, you cannot see Daniel Wong. So again, she spends a lot of time, like, I don't know exactly how long this takes, but like, we're about to get to the bad stuff in about 2010.
Do they believe that he's like somehow responsible for like her lying?
They just don't. It doesn't sound like they wanted her dating at all. And then like he was helping her to lie. So I don't know. They're just they don't want her dating, I guess.
Was he clued in to what was happening or was she lying to him?
Oh, yeah.
Too?
Yeah. She would go hang out with him during the day sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. So even though they forbid her from hanging out with Daniel, she still found a way to reconnect with him. They were one of those couples that it sounds like kind of was on again, off again a lot.
Mm.
At some point in all this, and this is a trigger warning for sexual assault very briefly. At some point in the midst of their like on again, off again relationship, Daniel starts a new relationship with someone else. And Jennifer is so angry that she calls Daniel and tells him that his new girlfriend had sent 3 men over to her place to break in and gang rape her, and that they mailed her a bullet the next day, and that, like, basically that she this had all been set up by his new girlfriend, like, and he either believed her or they figured it out and they got back together. So, yeah, I don't believe that that happened. I would hate to think that someone would lie about that. But like, she's a liar. So, like, I just don't believe it.
She lie about.
Yeah, she's a liar. When she doesn't get her way, she lies as much as she can to get out of it.
But like, if I'm him and I've been a co-conspirator in this whole thing, how do you believe anything that comes out of her mouth?
It's hard to say. You know, who knows? So Daniel and her are on again, and he introduces her to someone named Lenford Crawford. And this name is going to be important later. She, I don't really know how she went from A to B here, but at some point she decides to ask Lenford Crawford to kill her parents. She hires him and says she's going to pay him $10,000 to break into her house and kill both her parents.
Two murders for $10,000.
It's a little bit cheap. Yeah.
I wasn't going to say it, but thank
you. Well, I mean, yeah, I would hope that nobody would pay to murder anybody, but like,
life but does like, not have a price.
But like, $10,000 to kill two people?
Yeah,
kill
it's certainly
two
not
people?
$10,000.
Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
I always find it interesting how much people charge their like hitmen in these cases. Like, because I've heard it as low as like $3,000,
mm-hmm,
and as high as in the millions. But like, it's just interesting what people value other people's lives at. And by interesting, I mean disgusting.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So they, and also they're planning all this over text. So idiots.
Thank you for the paper trail.
Yeah, exactly. So they decide on the date, November 8th, 2010, and Crawford says he's going to come over after work and take care of it. So that night, Bick Ha, Jennifer's mother, this is so sweet, she'd been out line dancing, which was something she did every week, I guess, like with her family, like a family member or friends, I don't know, but darling. So
line
Bick
dancing
Ha got,
looks fun, to be honest.
I mean, yeah, go off. So Bick Ha got home late and was reading downstairs. It sounds like Hui Han, Jennifer's father, was in bed. And Jennifer said goodnight to her mother a little before 10 o'clock and then kind of snuck away and unlocked their front door. She turns on the lights in the upstairs, like one of the rooms upstairs. She does like a signal, like a light switch kind of thing. And then this guy, Lenford Crawford, which is a mouthful, and his two cronies named David Mulvaganam and Eric Carty, they all entered the house through the unlocked front door. As Jennifer puts it, they had guns and they said, you know, give us all your money and we won't hurt you. So she went around and like got money for them around the house. They had like had her parents downstairs. They tied her arms behind her. No, they tied her hands together and then her arms to a banister and they leave her upstairs. And she's tied with shoelaces. They take them down to the basement and they shoot both of them in the head in the basement. At some point, Jennifer calls 911 in the midst of all this. And she's, you know, panicking. She's freaking out. Very good actress, by the way. And while she's on the phone with 911, you hear just like panicked screaming in the background. And it is her father, Hui Han. He has survived being shot in the face, has crawled up the basement stairs, and has run out the front door, like, looking for help.
Oh, my God.
Yep. And unfortunately, Bick Ha, Jennifer's mother, is dead in the basement.
And for what?
Yeah. So immediately, police bring Jennifer in for questioning that very night. The thing that was very suspicious to them was how she was tied to the banister and was also able to get her phone and like call 911 and speak into the receiver. I've heard the call. It doesn't sound like she's on speaker. It sounds like she's holding the phone up like this, but her hands are tied behind her back.
Okay.
So they're suspicious of Jennifer for that. There's also a few things that are really like sus about the whole event. Jennifer claims to have given them cash, but they find a bunch of cash in the house. They find the keys to their expensive cars, like, in plain sight. There's, like, jewelry that's untouched. Like, all, you know, it's not like a typical robbery. No electronics have been taken. So if it was a robbery gone wrong, they really didn't do a very good job of robbing anybody.
Bad robbers.
Yeah. So police are also, like, they send her home that night, but that, or, you know, to wherever, because she probably didn't go home. You can't when it's a crime scene.
I was thinking that about that, actually, that when you're not the murderer of your parents and your parents are murdered and it isn't you and you can't go home because it is a crime scene, like, how horrible must that be?
Yeah, like, you can't even go home and your home is, like, ruined.
Yeah, your home is completely transformed. Like, that's devastating.
So they bring her back for a second interview a couple days later. They're so skeptical of her story that they tie her up the same way that she says that she was tied up. And they're like, okay, show us how you got the phone. And then they're like, show us how you called. And, like, she can't do all of the things that she said she could. So they're still very suspicious, but they don't do anything that day.
Oh.
What seals it? Her father, after he was, you know, running out of the house screaming, he's immediately taken to the hospital and put in a medically induced coma. He wakes up from his coma on November 12th, and he tells police that he had seen Jennifer talking to one of the quote-unquote robbers and was talking to him like a friend, not like somebody that was scared for their life. And he also said that Jennifer wasn't tied up. Like, she was, like, walking around with them and, like, was around. God. So at this point, they bring Jennifer in again for questioning and they start to kind of push her a little bit more. And they're like, we know this is what happened. And eventually she kind of fesses up. She says that, you know, the only reason that the robbers were in there that night was because I had a plan to have them come in and kill me. And somehow wires got crossed and they killed both of my parents instead. I don't know what happened. Bitch, it's all in text messages. Like,
that's terrible.
Yeah. So Daniel Wong is arrested as a co-conspirator along with Jennifer. And then eventually in spring 2011, so a few months later, they arrest the other two guys. So all of them are put on trial for this and they are found guilty of first degree murder of Jennifer's mom, Bic Ha, and her attempted murder of Hui Han, her father. Most of them got, 4 out of the 5 got life sentences with no chance of parole. One of the other, like, crony guys, Eric Carty, it's really, like, random, but it sounds like his lawyer got sick during the original trial where they were all tried together. So his trial got, like, pushed out. And then in that time, he, like, decided to plead guilty. And so he struck a deal. But then, unfortunately, he died in prison in 2018 of, like, natural causes. All That's Interesting said that in 2023, so just last year, Jennifer Pan was granted a new trial for the murder of her mother. And it says, quote, the panel of judges presiding over the appeal decided that the original trial judge had made a critical error by instructing the jury that they were only to consider the option of first degree murder, as opposed to also being able to consider second degree murder or manslaughter. As of August 2023, Canada's Supreme Court was still weighing whether or not to hear the case. So that is kind of remains to be seen. However, she has a life sentence for the attempted murder of her father, so it's not going to make a huge difference.
Well, if she gets bit by a vampire, it'll cut her time in half.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of discourse around Jennifer's case, particularly in the communities that study Asian American culture. Like we were talking about kind of at the beginning, obviously I don't have any firsthand knowledge of this. But there is kind of a stereotype of Asian parents being very hyper-focused on education and discipline. And so this is something that people highlight in Jennifer's case when asking, like, what made her do this. I don't have really anything to add to this discourse, but I think it's interesting and it's worth kind of mentioning because obviously a lot of people across cultures have overbearing parents, have difficult childhoods, and they don't all, you know, hire hitmen to kill their parents. But this is from the Washington Post, I believe. Quote, as attention is drawn to the mental health issues among Asian Americans, it now also fuels questions about how much pressure is too much. It goes on, it's a mistake to take one case and generalize or stereotype. This is a quote from Jennifer Lee, who is a sociology professor at University of California, Irvine. She continues, Pan's story is an extreme case. It's so easy to blame immigrant parents. The danger of highlighting cases like Jennifer's is that they contribute to a misconception that all Asian American kids experience this extreme pressure and are mentally unstable. Again, she says this way better than I as a white person ever could, so I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah.
Jennifer's parents certainly had a role in making her feel trapped, but I think there's a broader discussion to be had about the expectations that teachers, peers, and institutions place on people like Jennifer to fit that stereotype of the exceptional Asian American student. And again, this is sociology professor Jennifer Lee who this quote is from. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's hard to say there's not just one thing that contributed to this crime. It's a lot of like nature versus nurture questions in this case for me. And just also, it's just hard to imagine getting to a point where you felt like your parents, like, you were reduced down to the money you would get from your inheritance if they died. That's hard for me to wrap my brain around.
Yeah. We always want to ask, like, what pushes someone to plan a murder? 'Cause this was, like, thoroughly planned, not super thoroughly. As we saw, it fell apart really quickly.
Yeah, it did fall apart within 3 days.
Yeah, but planned over text message, thought about, premeditated, checks all those boxes. I'm sorry, Canadian courts, but I don't know how you could do manslaughter on this one.
No.
But like, but yeah, I think there are so many factors in a crime like this to be considered.
Yeah. So Jennifer and all of her co-conspirators, except for the one that died in prison in 2018, they are still inmates in the Canada, you know, in jail place, whatever it's called.
Prison system?
Whatever they call it in Canada.
The Canada jail place.
Yeah. And Jennifer, actually, a court has barred her from contacting her father or brother ever again.
Uh-huh.
And her father actually had to testify against her in court. And the last thing he ever kind of said to her publicly about her was that he hoped that she would learn to be a better person in prison and come out of this somehow, you know, a more honest person.
I can't even imagine having to testify against your child for something like that.
I can't imagine it being in his shoes or the brother's shoes. Like, and there's not a lot about this brother, her younger brother named Felix. Like, if he felt this pressure as deeply as she did, like, it's really interesting. But he's kind of stayed out of the limelight, which, you know, of course,
yeah.
I would want to. The reason this case is like kind of being talked about a little bit more, I've found a few podcasts about it and everything. There's also going to be a documentary on Netflix coming out on April 10th called What Jennifer Did, and I'm about to watch that shiz.
Yeah, you'll have to let me know what you think.
Yeah, will do. So yeah, that's the case of Jennifer Pan.
That is fascinating. I actually don't think I've ever heard that one.
Damn. Okay. Now you know.
Now I know, but I'm always fascinated, like I said, kind of at the beginning of this case, I'm always fascinated with people who curate this whole false life for themselves when they're doing, mm-hmm. when they're just doing nothing instead. And like there's a disconnect there of where you're willing to jump through a million hoops to convince someone that you have this job or that you're going to this school or that you're making these strides. And you could be working on the thing, but you're working on lying.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's just fascinating to me how these things also fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing this.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. And thank you, listener, for also listening. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye for now.
Do you have a hunger for cinematic horror?
Do you enjoy the thrill from seeing boogeymen, beasts, and butchers go about their dark work?
Then all you need to do is speak of the devil, and the devil will come to you.
Speak of the Devil is a podcast for all movies that have anything from demons and poltergeists to serial killers and the supernatural.
I'm Kayla.
And I'm Taylor.
Join us as we embark on a journey through the dark recesses of horror films, from the classics to blockbusters and everything in between.
New episodes come out every Wednesday wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're not scared of anything.
Are you?
Hello again. And welcome back to Anything Bones, a podcast where we talk about
bones, bone-related topics.
Oh, yeah.
Scary crimes, scary horses, scary mausoleums and cemeteries, you know, all kinds of spooky stuff.
And witches.
Witches, too. Yeah. Yeah.
We love to talk about witches. And we have talked about the Salem witch trials. We have talked about many witches that have been accused in England. But I'll tell you where the true brutality of European witch trials was. Can you guess?
Not England.
Not England.
France?
No.
Italy?
You are closer with England.
Scotland?
Hell yeah.
Jesus.
We were talking about the Scottish witch trials today.
Oh, damn. Yeah, that's damn. Okay, I'm intrigued.
So my sources for this topic were Wikipedia at least twice. Scotsman.com, burialsandbeyond.com, Roz.scot, and that's Roz stands for Remembering the Accused Witches of Scotland.
Oh, hell yeah.
Which I love. SpookyScotland.net.
Love.
RSE.org.uk. And LivesBreatheScotland.com.
Okay, I'm here for it.
Yes. So we're going to talk about the Scottish witch trials a little bit and the attitude towards witchcraft. And then we're going to talk about a specific witch.
Okay. Maybe she's my ancestor.
Maybe she is.
Who knows?
Could be.
One can only dream.
One can hope and dream. She seems like a pretty cool lady.
Did I tell you this? That we thought we, on my mom's side of the family, we thought we were pretty Irish this whole time. And the DNA, like online DNA archive that my grandpa and my mom and them are in, updated and we're actually Scottish.
Hey.
Like way more Scottish.
I mean, being Scottish is very cool.
Yeah, I'm embracing it.
Get your kilt on, girl.
Yeah, hell yeah.
But maybe take some notes from the story on shit not to do in the Scottish Islands, baby.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
So in the late Middle Ages, we're talking like 1400s, early 1500s, there was a bit of witch trialing, really more of people getting accused of witchcraft through like having done harm to somebody. Like they're really being tried for the harm, not really for the witchcraft.
Okay.
See what I'm saying? They're like,
I mean, yeah, it's kind of like tomato, tomato, like, but sure.
A little bit, but do you see where I'm talking about? Like if I did witchcraft and broke your ankle, I'm being charged for breaking your ankle, not for the witchcraft.
Sure.
They're right.
But it doesn't matter to the witch.
Quote unquote, witch. Yes, you're getting. Yeah, you're in it either way. And people heavily believe in witchcraft.
Of course.
They're like, yes, I do believe you broke her ankle with witchcraft.
With your mind.
Yeah. Well, with the powers of Satan.
Oh, sure.
Obviously. I went to the devil and I said, devil, Caitlin's a better dancer than me.
Break her ankle now.
Take that bitch out.
And I fell down the stairs and only broke my ankle.
Yes, you were. The rest of you was fine. So then as like witchcraft kind of becomes something that's more in the popular consciousness, we get the passing of the Witchcraft Act of 1563.
Oh, that old bastard.
That old bastard. Do you know her?
No, I just said that.
I thought you were like, ah, I know where we are now in history.
No, but I can imagine that it's a shitty document made by shitty men saying that any woman that has an opinion or has a job or, you know, whatever, like has a bad attitude.
She looked at a chicken once.
I don't know. I just think it's going to be bad.
Well, you're right. It does make witchcraft or consulting with witches a capital crime.
Yeah.
Now, when I curse you and break your ankle, I'm getting in trouble for the witchcraft and probably for the breaking of your ankle.
Yeah, you're dead no matter what, okay?
Oh, I'm fucked. I really must want to win this dancing competition. One of the first major instances of, like, a high-profile witch trial happening under this new, like, Witchcraft Act of 1563 were the North Berwick witch trials. And they were a set of witch trials in 1590 that a bunch of people from East Lothian, Scotland, were accused of witchcraft. And they were said to be, like, consulting with the devil on Halloween night, which sounds fun.
Yeah, like at a crossroads, like what the fuck?
I mean, I always picture the woods, but the crossroads mm-hmm. is a very good place to find and make deals with the devil.
Yeah, yeah.
And to dance.
If you have all your ankles.
Yeah, sorry, bitch. You ain't dancing with the devil tonight. You better keep that thing elevated. So there were a bunch of people implicated in this trial, over 70.
Jesus Christ.
And it lasted for 2 years.
Oh, God. That, like, must have just been an endless fucking 2 years.
Oh, God, it was a nightmare, probably. Like, if you, like, were a friend of a friend of a friend who was, like, part of this, you were, like, drug into this.
Fuck.
Which sucked. So one person who was heavily involved in these seemingly never-endless witch trials was King James VI of Scotland. And he was both a victim of this whole thing and also an investigator, which doesn't seem ethical to me.
So wait, he was a victim first and then he investigated, or the other way, or he was an investigator and then they were like, oh, he's actually a witch.
No. Like, he was affected by the witchcraft somehow.
Oh,
he also investigated victim. The crime. Yeah.
Highly in quotes, victim.
Yes, victim.
See, I was thinking the real victim here is the woman on trial, but my mistake.
Caitlin, no. You're seeing this through modern eyes
that's
again.
That's so crazy. Wow.
Yeah, this is going to boil your blood.
Uh-oh.
And he gets really, King James VI, he gets really into witchcraft. He's like, and hunting witches. Not doing witchcraft himself, but finding it and stamping it out. And he publishes the Demonologie in 1597. So 7 years after this trial, he's got a book out about witchcraft.
He's like, here are my thoughts.
Yeah.
Read them and weep, witches.
I mean, yeah, there would be weeping because it really got everybody into hunting witches. And for the next almost 200 years, the people of Scotland were completely enthralled by witchcraft, hunting witches and punishing them brutally.
God damn it.
I know. Trendsetter in the worst way.
Yeah, the worst kind of trend. Thanks for nothing.
So we're going to kind of now, with that intro in mind, we're going to kind of zoom in on one witch's case. That of Janet Horn in the 1720s. So Janet had been a lady's maid for a kind of fancy lady in her youth, and she had traveled all across the country and seen a lot of Scotland. After she had kind of outgrown this job, she ended up returning home and getting married and having a daughter. We don't know too much about her daughter other than she had a disability that had to do with her hands being formed differently than normal.
Okay.
So we don't know if this is a birth defect that her daughter suffered from, but some stories also say that it could have been she was burned badly as an infant.
Oh, God.
Either way, her daughter has a disability. And later in life, I'm not sure what happens to the husband, But Janet and her daughter end up moving to the small town of Louth in Scotland. She's been in Scotland this whole time. And we don't know quite what she does in Louth other than just like be a Scottish lady.
Sure.
But she ends up living to an elderly age, which like good for you in the 1700s.
Quite an accomplishment then.
Yeah, seriously. You know, you break your ankle once and you might die.
Yeah, it happened.
I'm looking at you. No.
Tanya. It happened, medieval Tanya Harding.
Yeah. Oh, God. So in her older age, she started in her. Louis, Kuno. Come here. Come here. Hey, both of you. Come on. Good boy. Come here. Come here, sweetness. Hello. I know. Someone walked outside. I know. It's the worst. I hate it when they do that. Where were we? Janet has lived to be an elderly lady. And with old age, sometimes the mind ages too. And she was showing signs of dementia. And she was doing kind of weird stuff around the village.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens.
Yeah, like if you've ever had an elderly grandparent or, you know, that has memory problems, you've seen him do weird stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know how these people did not, like, recognize this for that. Like, maybe people did not get old enough in Louth for this shit to happen.
That's part of it, yeah. Or just a lack of any kind of empathy or curiosity.
Well, speaking of lack of empathy, in addition to our girl Janet experiencing some dementia, people also were incredibly shitty about her daughter who had a disability.
Great. Perfect. Pile
they
it on.
They immediately saw that and were like, I can be horrible about that.
That sucks.
It very much sucks. And also, just as a reminder, witchcraft was a very real thing. It was a force as real as weather, you know, to these people. So, like, when you start suspecting someone of witchcraft, that's the end of it, right? Because, like, everybody starts suspecting this person of witchcraft.
Well, this is a kind of thing where just like a whiff of it, just like if it's attached to your name at all, it was just like, it seems like it was just hopeless. You didn't have a chance.
Oh, you were totally damned. And, like, I just hate that. Given that all of those things, those three kind of factors put together and probably a bunch of other factors, her neighbors soon accused her of being a witch. And, you know, she's an older woman. She can't really defend herself too good. Everyone is now suspicious of her being a witch. And the rumor among, this is really, really horrible. The rumor in this town is that the daughter's hands are the way that they are because her mother transformed her into a pony and rode her to meet the devil, where the devil and her put horseshoes on her daughter.
See, where do they come up with this shit? Like,
it's what? Really cruel, hideous ableism.
What?
Like, it's seeing a disabled person and going,
God,
they must have at one point been a horse. It's like
what?
Oh my God.
What does that have to do with anything? Are you okay? Like,
they were not.
Are you okay to be, like, should you be in charge though?
I mean, apparently this was something that was within the realm of possibility to the people of the time.
That is insane.
But it's a really, really hideous thing to say about a person with a disability.
Yeah.
This was what was believed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people ate that shit up, I'm sure.
Yeah. And so in 1727, both Janet and her daughter were taken to this place called the Toll Booth in Dornish. And this is a place where, like, many witches were questioned and imprisoned. And because our girl Janet is suffering from dementia, when they question her, she's giving really strange responses.
Yeah.
And
she's old. Like, what do you want from her? Yeah, fuck. What about respect your elders? Like, Fucking send her to get a doctor. Fuck.
Right? And so obviously because she gives these strange answers, they are like, she's definitely a witch.
Of course. Yeah, sure.
And the charges that are laid against her in her trial, which really does not take very long. Hi, sweetness. I know. In a little bit. In a little bit, my sweetie. So in addition to the claims that she turned her daughter into a pony and rode her to meet the devil, she is also apparently responsible for the local crop failures that have been happening.
Oh, sure.
Which includes a lot of livestock death. And she is accused of, quote, oh, hi, sweetness.
Kuno is like, I will have my voice heard.
I know you will, sweetie. In a minute. I love you so much. Oh. Here we go. Yeah. You like the good scratches. All right.
Relatable, so, though.
Relatable, yeah. You just want scratches and to be heard. So she is accused of, quote, bewitching pigs and poultry.
Okay.
I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah.
But, you know, Janet does not really know what the hell is going on. She's not connected to reality in the same way that people are. So she's going along with whatever people are saying to her.
Yeah. And she's scared. It's very confusing and scary for people when they are slowly kind of losing memory function. They oftentimes lash out or just, yeah, like, yeah, they do weird things.
Yeah, and can you even imagine, like, I'm imagining my elderly grandparents, all of which have passed, and, you know, imagining them, you know, sometimes in care facilities where you wake up in a care facility and you don't know what's going on. Someone tells you, okay, you're supposed to be here and everything's okay. And so imagine being a fucking elderly person in fucking 1720 whatever, and someone's telling you you're a witch, like, and you can't remember any differently.
No, it's insane that anybody was like taking this for fact.
There was a different belief system,
I guess.
And they truly believed that witches were harmful people who were malicious in their intent.
Because of this book?
I mean, the book helped it, folklore, you know, cultural stuff.
Yeah.
But so through this speedy trial, both Janet and her daughter are convicted of witchcraft.
Of course.
And sentenced to death.
Of course. Oh, God.
Luckily, there's a little bit of light in this story. Janet's daughter was able to escape the night before their execution.
Hell yeah.
So she was out.
Bye.
The devil came and rescued her ass.
Yeah, whatever. Like, yeah, obviously
or
she's...
something. Yeah.
Yeah. What? Like,
she
good
escaped,
for her.
Thank
for
God.
Her.
Yeah. Unfortunately, our girl Janet was not so lucky.
No.
And she had to go through with her execution, which is said to have been in June of 1727. And so on that day, they take Janet out to the edge of town, the town border. They make her take off all her clothes. Ugh. They cover her in tar.
What?
And feathers. Yeah.
And
they make her walk through town.
Oh, my God.
They're like, we've taken you from the farthest point. Now you have to walk through town. And as she's walking through town, stumbling, because she is an old woman covered in tar.
Jesus.
People are hurling abuses at her and throwing stuff at her.
God.
Yeah. And when she reaches the spot of her execution, she is placed in a barrel and then lit on fire.
Oh, my God.
When I said that the Scottish people were brutal about their witches, I'm not kidding.
Holy shit.
In England, you get a burned at the stake. You get a strangled. Scottish are like, no, you have to walk through town getting publicly shamed, put in a barrel and burned to death.
That's so hideous. Ugh.
And because part of the burning of a witch is that they are not buried, their soul is denied, you know, entrance to heaven.
Right.
We can assume that her body was not buried.
No,
There is, however, a stone that marks the spot of her execution, but unfortunately, it shows the date of her execution as 1722 rather than the real date, 1727.
Okay.
And I actually sent you an email.
I saw that. It said, please do not open, please, or something like that.
Yeah, because I did not want you to open until now. But this is really interesting because you can see some modern pictures of the stone, but you can also see pictures of the stone going back into the early 1900s.
Yeah.
So widening out a little bit more to Greater Scotland, the witch trials continued until the Scottish and English parliaments were merged in 1707, and the new unified parliament repealed the 1563 Witchcraft Act in 1736. So just as a timeline, the law against witchcraft was in effect from 1563 to 1736. That's 175 years.
Damn.
So during this time, anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 people were accused of witchcraft. And an overwhelming 84% of them were women.
Yeah. Oh, God. And so basically, if you're accused, it's more than likely that you were executed because of the accusation.
Over half of the people were probably executed.
Ugh. So brutal.
And yeah, and it was not as, you know, in all these witch trials, we see similar things of like confession under torture, sleep deprivation, just really hideous conditions to be living in, awaiting trial. They hated these people.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't enough to imprison them. They had to hurt them.
Yeah.
Some evidence suggests from studies done that Scotland executed five times as many people per capita as any other set of witch trials in Europe.
Jesus.
So when I said that they went hard on the witch trials, I was not kidding.
They went overboard. Everybody did, but they really massively went overboard.
Yeah, and they did not stop with the witchcraft shit after 1736. Like, there's actually a murder of a woman in 1738 that this guy thought that she had turned into a hare. She turned herself into a rabbit. And
okay.
He murdered her for that.
What?
And there's a plaque where he was hung, but we don't know her name.
Wait, he said that she turned into a rabbit?
Yeah.
But then, so what, they hung a rabbit? Or did, what? Unclear. Unclear.
Well, she
obviously
turned.
Or is he saying, she went back to human form? He's like, oh, I saw her turn into a rabbit, but oh, yeah. She's human now?
Yeah.
What? And everyone's like,
well, he murdered her. This was not in a court of law. He just murdered her.
Oh, my God. Oh, God.
And there's a plaque with his name on it where he was hung.
No,
but
thank
we don't
you.
Know her name. And I'm going to do something to you that you're going to hate, Caitlin. But I've been lying to you this entire time. Because Janet Horn might not have been her name, because Janet Horn was just a common euphemism for witch.
Damn. We don't
in
even
Scotland
know her real
at
name.
The time, yeah. That her name may have been something similar, but writers at the time just recorded it as Janet Horn, sometimes Jenny Horn, and that was a common like Jane Doe, like
sure.
It's just like a name for a witch.
Jesus.
And you want to know the real kicker?
There's yes, okay.
She was just 9 years off from that Witchcraft Act being repealed.
Yeah.
She's 9 years away from that.
That's, damn it.
But she is the last person to be executed legally for witchcraft in the British Isles.
Damn. These poor women and the people that were tried for this. I mean,
they just died namelessly and gravelessly.
Namelessly, yeah, needlessly. There was no reason for it other than just like, oh, someone did so, you know, like just because someone
animosity,
just because you don't like someone doesn't mean you can just, or you think they ruined your crop
or you don't like something about them, or something about them is so different. Like the poor daughter who just had like possibly just a birth defect, something was different about her hands. Yeah. Or was burned as an infant.
Jesus.
Like, how are you going to be shitty about that? That's so, like, when I read that, I was like, that's beyond.
Well, I mean, yeah. I know it was a different time, but, like, come on.
I was going to say, we have our modern sensibilities, but people have been disabled for all of time.
Yeah.
And people have always not always thought that way. You know, like, I don't know. I wrote my notes, so much of the witch trials was ableism.
Well, yeah.
It's just, yeah. But I'm so happy that she got away. I hope that's true.
The daughter.
Yeah. And I hope that there's some peace for Janet Horn or whatever her actual name was.
Yeah, Jesus.
I'm sorry to lie to you, Caitlin.
No, it's okay. I thought Janet Horn was like a weird name for a Scottish woman. Well, didn't sound quite real.
Well, it's just kind of, like I said, it's like Jane Doe. It's just like a name that, like, in the Scottish, they place were like, oh, older. Just some, like, Janet Horn was executed here the other day. Like,
yeah, fuck.
You know, oh, no, you know her. She's just some Janet Horn, you know.
Damn.
And it's just like, that's super interesting to, like, know that they talked about witches so much and unnamed witches at that they just called them that.
Yeah, it just, it's all, it's just like a, I don't even know what to call it.
It's a mass death event.
Yeah. And for what? Just for what?
I mean, for this, it's, you know, it's the strength of religion. It's the strength of superstition. It's the strength of the mind being willing to convince itself of anything.
Yeah.
Well, we've brought you another exceptionally upsetting episode.
Deep, deep. In the pits of despair right now.
But I thought the Scottish witch trials were interesting. They certainly have a lot more violence than...
It's amazing how there were witch trials like all over the world. It's just like, how did everybody get this idea like so ingrained in the culture? It blows my mind. It's like a mass hysteria.
Yeah, it's a bit of a virus of the mind. Yeah. Spreads very quickly.
Yeah. Anyway, if you enjoyed this episode, or if you like some of our lighter episodes, or just if you've enjoyed any of your time here today, we hit the subscribe button on your preferred podcast platform and leave us a review. If you're feeling generous, it really helps. And yeah. We'll see you next time.
Yeah, come and follow us on Instagram for pictures from this episode.
Oh, yeah. We'll find some pickies.
I hope you have a wonderful week, and I hope that you take a little time to appreciate your bones.
Definitely.
Bone voyage. Dino toes.
Thanks for listening to Anything Bones. Follow us on Instagram or Facebook at Anything Bones Podcast, or email us at anythingbonespodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you to Nick Kruger for our spooky music, and Steven Vetteroff
at Chubby Scrubby on Twitter
for our jazzy vocals. And thank you to Camilla Franklin
at Camilla Strader on Instagram
for our beautiful bony artwork. Please rate, review, and subscribe.
I don't know how I feel.
I mean, we never love funeral home malfeasance, but I'm just saying, if you're the wildest state, go for every category.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't just go for living crimes.
Jesus.